This is the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, helping you run your restaurant better.
Welcome back to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. As I say every single start of every podcast, I really appreciate you guys coming and joining us every week when we get to drop some knowledge and introduce you guys to some new partners and some new people that are out there in the industry. And not very unlike what the last probably 30 or so podcasts have been, we are joined today by a very special guest, Audrey Hogan. Audrey, how's it going today?
Hey, doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, I really appreciate you coming and hanging out with us on the podcast. Why don't you tell our audience who is Audrey and what does Audrey get to do for a living?
Yeah. Well, I'm Audrey Hogan. Thanks for introducing me. I work with TimeForge. I run the day-to-day. We're a workforce management solution, specializing in all things retail, especially restaurants. So we get to help with fun things from, you know, clocking in and out to how to build a schedule that keeps your customers happy, all the way over to those fun California compliance rules.
Oh, you call those fun, huh? When they first came out, it seems like there's a new rule definitely every year, but every 6 months that there's some new rule that we got to comply with and deal with. So, you know, and I know we'll talk later about it in the podcast, but I don't, quite frankly, I wonder how people get by, especially in certain states like California, without a system like TimeForge to be able to manage those things. I don't even know how I would comply with some of those different rules.
Yeah, it's either you don't or you have lots of spreadsheets and pieces of paper and you cross your fingers. Yeah.
Yeah. And you just pray that nobody comes and sues you for doing the wrong thing. So you mentioned TimeForge as a workforce management. And I know that some of our audience members might say, well, you know, I've got a point of sale and it's got a time clock. Can you tell me a little bit about kind of what's the difference between like a time clock and a workforce management solution and a full HRIS system before we kind of dig into a little bit of the value proposition behind TimeForge and kind of what you guys do?
Yeah. So it kind of, it kind of depends on looking at the vendor's perspective, right? Point of sale is really, really good at doing its core job, tracking your sales and helping you get visibility into that. I have yet to run into a point of sale that's really, really good at making sure, again, back to the compliance, that you're compliant for whatever your local regulations are, or handling some of those kind of weird things that pop up. So you want to make sure that your point of sale has all the data that you need for the front side of it. But on the back side, you really need to know exactly how you should be driving your labor with that data that the point of sale is giving you. And closing that gap is not something anyone in the point of sale industry, seems to have really done a great, great job of just yet.
Absolutely. Yeah. And for our longtime listeners, they know that I live in California, so we've had the privilege of having to deal with some of those crazy California laws and both point of sale systems that we represent. At least deal with the transactional engine, but don't necessarily deal with the compliance aspect of it, and even, you know, helping people to schedule around things. I know you had mentioned, you know, kind of part of the workforce management is the onboarding, it's the compliance, it's the scheduling, and so I'm looking forward to chatting through those things. For our audience members, how long have you been at TimeForge and kind of how did you get into this space?
Yeah, I've been with TimeForge for a long time now. My background in a previous life, I ran restaurants and retail establishments. So when I was working my way through college, I thought it'd be fun to have like this part-time cashier job. I'd get a job as a cashier. And before that, while I was in high school, I had actually been a blog writer for TimeForge. And through osmosis, I had absorbed all of this operational knowledge. And then in college, I'm trying to get these like little part-time jobs. And I kept getting promoted to being like a store supervisor or an assistant manager.
That's really funny.
Which I didn't want at the time. Like I was taking a full load in college. And I kept being like voluntold into promotions. Just because I had kind of learned by working with these other businesses and hearing their stories and getting their stories out there, the right way to keep your labor costs under control. And then I got out into the real world and I discovered like that stuff actually matters like a lot. If you're not controlling your labor, you're not going to be successful.
Absolutely. That's hilarious. I didn't know the answer to that question when I asked it, but I think that's a really cool story. You know, and oftentimes, you know, a lot of those people that do get to these places are because they've got a real life experience of having to try and solve a problem, and they end up either implementing a solution like TimeForge and or working for a company that helps implement those kind of solutions. So it's kind of funny that's where it came through. And again, I know again, our longtime listeners know that that we often will talk about, you know, the two most impactful costs within the business are your labor costs and your food costs. And so we're really going to dig deep today on why do you need to manage your labor costs and what value proposition does that look like when you manage your labor costs? And so, Audrey, let's take it from the beginning. When you guys go into an engagement with somebody that's not on any workforce management at all, they're not using anything else out there, because I'm sure you guys have competitors out there, but if they're not using any kind of workforce management, where do you guys start? Do you guys start at the time clock? Do you guys start at the scheduling? Do you guys start at the compliance? Do you guys start at the HR? Talk to me a little bit about how you guys would start an engagement if you guys were to go into a local restaurant and say, hey, you know what? You really need something like TimeForge to be able to manage your business and manage your employees and manage your compliance. Where do you guys start that engagement?
Lots of questions, lots and lots of them. You can't go in, not only in those situations, you could be talking to a customer who has been using some kind of online workforce management platform for years. You can't make any assumptions. There are so many legacy processes, especially with people who've been trying to manage everything with paper, that a lot of times those processes, are just how it's always been. And so you've kind of got to identify what is built in intentionally into how the business is being run when managing its labor versus what was a constraint of like a previous system or that's all they knew how to do in Excel. So it's lots of questions like that.
Yeah, I love that. And so, we've talked with our audience members quite a bit about managing your labor. And so as you guys start to ask those questions, I'm assuming the questions are leading to some of the things that TimeForge or other workforce management solutions can solve for those people, like how do you build an ideal schedule? So is that kind of where you guys are gearing those questions towards to make sure that you guys are helping these operators manage their labor appropriately?
Yeah, we're kind of, with those questions, we're kind of performing a triage, right? Like, usually someone comes to us with a problem that they want to solve. Maybe that labor costs are too high. Maybe their customer service levels aren't consistent. Maybe they just want to get off of those paper processes. And so that's the priority for the customer. So we have to keep that at the front of our implementation. But along the way, we're almost guaranteed to find other things that are a big risk to the customer's business that also need peppered in. And so that's kind of what we're trying to do with that triage is just find what other priorities are gonna come up. It could be that, you know, one of the managers for 20 years has been modifying people's time cards to make sure that, you know, he thinks that they probably should have clocked out 5 minutes earlier. And that's, you know, those kinds of things happen all the time. And until you're doing something like a full implementation and really analyzing all of those processes, a lot of business owners don't even know that's going on.
Absolutely. And we on, you know, kind of my normal day job often get called into those compliance type things because, you know, a manager might have been doing that for a long time. And then they go to the labor board and they're like, who did these time clock adjustments and all of that. And I'm sure you guys run into it as well, because we do in our line of work. It's like, oh, no. We don't have any problems with labor. We know exactly what we're doing. But oftentimes, even just a 1% savings in labor, you know, on somebody that's spending $1 million a year in labor ends up being quite a bit of money when it all comes down to it. And so I think, you know, to your point on your guys' triage and kind of how you guys go down this path, there's a lot of both efficiency to be gained as well as cost to be saved. Would you agree?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm the first one to say it. Maybe I shouldn't as a software vendor, but half of my job is implementing software, And the other half is really optimizing processes. And that's kind of tailored to every customer. The software is going to get you a lot of benefit immediately. And there's a lot of things that our software does that no one else can. But if you don't buy into the processes as well, it's not going to benefit anyone.
Yeah, I would agree. And my favorite is when you go into a system, hey, we need you to replace this other system, but we want it to do exactly like the old one did. It's like, well, why exactly are you changing? Because I mean, I'm guessing you guys get some of those same kind of things. Well, I'm really mad at that vendor. So I want you to do exactly what they're doing, exactly the way they did it, but we're changing from them. So it just it's funny. And that goes back to a little bit of human behavior and kind of the way that things, you know, humans, I guess, behave and the way they think through things. So scheduling is a key component. Talk me through kind of what do you guys look at as far as scheduling, and how would you build a schedule as you're going through that consulting and as you're dealing with the processes that are going on within a restaurant? Let's just take an example of a restaurant that's got 50 seats. They've got maybe 5 servers on a Friday night or whatnot. What do you guys go through as it relates to the data aspect of it? And what do you go through as far as building a schedule that's not going to be just copied and pasted from a Monday to a Tuesday to a Wednesday to a Thursday, because volumes are going to look different? You know, one of the things I love about what you guys do at Timeforge is you guys use the data to really help drive decisions, not what the gut of the manager might look like.
Yeah, it really kind of gets tailored down to the customer in a lot of instances, just because no two restaurants are the same. Even within the same corporation, one franchise to another, there's going to be different talent levels. There's going to be a different level of training at that store compared to another one. I mean, each unit is really unique. And so we like to start off with, you know, back kind of to your point, a round of analysis just to understand what's going on. And my favorite way to get that done is with in-person observation. If I can go hang out at a restaurant for an afternoon with a restaurant manager, a general manager, and just see what's going on, I'll have a pretty good idea of what needs fixed and where we can help. If we're going to get to the nitty gritty of the actual like scheduling process, a lot of that has to do with what their managers are comfortable with, so what they've been doing, and then where the organization wants to get. So if, let's say, the goal is to better distribute their labor, which is often a goal that is brought to us to help solve, then we want to make sure we can identify reliably through trend analysis when customers are there the most, right? Yep. Like we need to know those peaks. And so if we can't forecast those peaks in sales, we're not ever going to be able to deliver a good schedule. So it really starts with the data analysis on the sales data, which is why our point of sale integrations are so critical to the success for the restaurants that we work with. So we actually have some machine learning algorithms and a data science team that helps with those efforts. And they crunch the numbers, and it's all way over my head.
I said those guys are a lot smarter than me, too. I can promise you that.
Yeah. And most of the time they can translate into something I can almost understand what they're doing. But they tune these machine learning algorithms. I think there's 44 or 47 of them now. And these machine learning algorithms all look at your historic sales data. And we go back as far as we can in the point of sale. Sometimes that's 4 years and sometimes it's 2 years. But we need that historic data so that we know what Christmas looks like or Valentine's Day looks like. So the last 12 months of sales forecasting has been really fun.
With COVID, because we're recording this in February of 2021. So yeah, the last 12 months has been a little bit challenging, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. But we've actually recovered really well from that. With the sales predictions being able, we're back to 98.78% accurate on the sales forecasting at the hourly level. So for our customers, we know for next Thursday, 1 week out, exactly what they're going to sell at 10 a.m. with 1% variance on average.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Incredible.
Well, and I guess for our audience members that have never embarked on something like this, you mentioned a few things that I want to bring back up. The power of the data that's already sitting in your point of sale that's not being exploited is probably one of the most underused gold mines that is there. Some of our listeners may have listened to the podcast that I did with Jordan Thaler a couple months ago, and it really, he and I talked about the power of the data that you already have that you're not necessarily using to be able to benefit your business. And so I love that you guys are taking that sales data that already exists in your point of sale, and then you're predicting out using these machine learning pieces. And then the second piece is you're doing the consulting to say, what does your labor force need to look like so that you can tell them, you know, predictively, what is your sales going to be? And how many people do you need to be in the kitchen? How many people do you need to be at the cashier or at the front of the house or as a busboy or as a bartender? Because you know, to your point, Audrey, a 1% variance, what the sales are going to look like. Is that kind of a fair assessment? Did I give a decent overview of how you guys pull those things together?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we try to rely on whatever the customer already has as their labor metrics, because that's kind of their internal communication style, right? It's the language that organization is already speaking. So if they're using like labor as a percentage of sales, we want to make sure that we're leveraging their existing budgets when we do this first round of implementation. If they're using a productivity metric, we want to make sure we're looking at that sales per labor hour and factoring that into how the labor is going to generate. It's really important.
Okay. Yeah. And so when you talk about that, because again, one of the questions that we had talked about in pre-show was, you know, some of these really large businesses, the McDonald's of the world, have these labor metrics that they've built out to very, very high degrees of both efficiency and what they want to get out of the business. How do you guys help those larger chains that want to get to that level and already kind of know what those metrics are? And then on the flip side, for those smaller guys, what do they typically use? Is it kind of just based on gut feel? Is it based on, hey, we've always had this, that, and the other? You know, tell me a little bit about kind of how you guys normally would do that from a large chain to a small chain.
Yeah, it's the main difference between, I guess, the larger chains and the smaller chains is really how they look at labor. So smaller chains tend to forget exactly how expensive the labor is. Like they view their labor as just a cost of doing business, if you will. And the larger chains have this ingrained into their mentality that really it's a controllable expense. And so when we're working with the larger chains, that has already been established that labor is your most controllable expense. Yep. And there's ways to tackle it without increasing turnover that can actually improve employee morale while keeping the labor where it's good for your business and your customers. And the smaller chains tend to perceive any kind of labor optimization or adjustment to the budgets or even holding people accountable to the budgets as some kind of detriment to their service or their culture. And it is a big task to make sure that you're balancing your company culture against any kind of budgets that you're going to hold people accountable to. But the big chains tend to already have that figured out. So we just have to figure out how to help the small chains kind of get on board with, it's not going to be the end of your company and it's going to be the same business, even though you have labor budgets that you're making your managers adhere to.
I love that. I love that because I oftentimes we run through those same problems when we're dealing with the smaller operators is they don't necessarily know what they want. They've never seen metrics like sales per man hour or, you know, productivity based on, you know, sales numbers in the front of the house and bar numbers for the bar and all of those kind of things. And so once you start to display some of that data, oftentimes the smaller guys, in my opinion, or in my experience, come back and go, oh, that's really cool, but I can't, you know, but Chris has been my bartender for 30 years and Chris needs to be here that amount of time. And ironically, oftentimes when you ask Chris the bartender, he's actually okay to change his schedule up a little bit because he's probably going to make more money on the tip side. But there's this built-in, you know, this is the way it's always been kind of thing with some of those smaller guys that I've seen.
Yeah, exactly. It's the other thing that kind of comes into the conversation with the small chains versus the large chains, I think anyways, is just the perception of scale, right? The large chains know that $10 is actually a big amount if it's happening every hour at every unit. And the smaller chains kind of go, it's $10, like whatever. But that it really, really adds up if you aren't enforcing your schedule and making sure that people can't clock in early. On average, this is a real statistic, on average, they're skimping $6 to $7 per shift. And then on top of that, an additional 7 minutes per break.
Wow. I didn't realize that you guys had that level of data. Well, and oftentimes what I will tell owners when I'm going through some of these metrics with them is you realize that that's a Mercedes payment that you just said that's not that big of a deal. And they're like, what are you talking about? Or that's your kid's college fund. And they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, you manage this a little bit more. It's $1,000 a month. Well, that's a nice car payment, you know? And they're like, oh, wow. You know, because they don't think about it that way, because it's $5 here and it's $5 there, but it's $5 every employee times 30 days in the month times, you know, 365 days in the year. It adds up to some pretty significant dollars.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And one of the things that, so my heart is with small independents. That's who TimeForge initially launched targeting, and that's who we served pretty exclusively for the first few years of our existence. And so that's really where my heart is. And I want to see small independents succeed and take over the world. And that's kind of my day-to-day fulfillment. But I think one of the biggest challenges is realizing that just because you're going to pay attention to those $10 or those 7 minutes here and there, it does not mean that you have to be living inside spreadsheets. Like with the right platforms, whether it's point of sale or a labor management platform, the system's going to help you. It'll alert you when there's something wrong, or there'll be a report that already has all the data. You don't have to go number crunching.
I love that. Well, and I think a lot of people think it's overwhelming, or that they have to be the Gustavo and go yell at people. No, get it, clock off, you know, or whatever, those kind of things. And so it'll be interesting as you guys start to do some presentations for some of the audience members, how simple it is once you get to some modern technology that can help you do some of this stuff. So one of the other things that, Audrey, we talked about kind of in the intro, which is not quite to labor management and scheduling and optimizing your labor mix and who's on the floor and who's working, is the flip side of things, which is compliance and dealing with compliance and dealing with minimum wage and dealing with tip credits and dealing with all of those kind of things. Can you talk a little bit about how you guys solve some of these types of things as it relates to compliance? Because, you know, whether you're in the most difficult litigious state, you know, California, or you're in New York where they've got different things, or you got different places where you guys are dealing with tip credits, every state you've got some level of labor compliance, whether it's daily overtime, weekly overtime, monthly overtime, all of those kind of things. You guys have to deal with all of that stuff. So talk to me a little bit about how you guys solve some of those things. And kind of where do you see people missing the mark so often when you guys engage with your restaurant brands?
Yeah, I think when people talk about compliance, 90% of the time, everyone thinks California, and I'm guilty of it. California is always my first example. Because those rules are the worst, man. But
yes, we suck. Well, have you gotten to Canada yet? Have you gotten to Canada with statutory holiday?
We do support statutory holidays.
Oh my gosh, that was the worst ever for me to go through. So I apologize. I didn't mean to cut you off, but my goodness, statutory holiday almost killed me when we had to implement some of those features years and years ago, because I had no idea that it was so complex up in Canada. So I'll let you complete your compliance conversation, but oh my goodness, that statutory holiday stuff was nutty to me. I didn't even realize that such rules existed.
Yeah, it's a whole different way of thinking. Like, if you can just understand it, once you get past understanding it, it's really not too hard to implement, but understanding it took a while, for sure.
That's funny. Sorry, I'll let you pick on California a little bit more.
Appreciated. Every opportunity, I take it. I think that as a general public, we have not yet recognized that the reality of labor law compliance is that it's not just in California. It has spread like wildfire. Seattle started with the predictive scheduling penalties years ago. Pennsylvania now has that rolled out. Are you familiar with predictive scheduling?
I am not, actually. I'd love for you to educate our audience a little bit on that one.
Yeah. So predictive scheduling, if you haven't heard of this, you're going to roll your eyes really hard as an employer. predictive scheduling rules and regulations are in place saying, for example, you have to build your schedule at least 14 to 21 days out.
Oh, my
back
goodness.
To that sales
okay.
forecast.
Sorry, I'll roll my eyes now. Okay, sorry, I'll let you keep going.
Okay. Yep. And then just to make it even better, if you adjust that employee's schedule within that 14 to 21 day window, just depending on where you're at and what the regulations there are, you actually have a penalty to pay. So for example, if you ask someone to stay an extra hour past their scheduled end time, you might be paying time and a half for that hour.
Wow. And how, well, I guess, so do you guys forecast out that far in advance to be able to help people with schedules that are that far out? Because again, we were joking about COVID and 2020 being such a hard year to predict. But in general, are you guys doing that far out of predictions?
We do. Yeah. We forecast out the next 6 weeks. Our 1 week out forecast, obviously more recent data helps that be a little bit more accurate 1 week out than 6 weeks out. But it's really not that bad about 6 weeks out. So what we ended up implementing with our sales forecasting when predictive scheduling started sweeping the nation is actually iterative forecasting is the fun, easy to say name that our team came up with, where every week we actually reforecast the same week over and over. And we can actually do that multiple times during a week if we want to. So that even though you've published your schedule, let's say 3 weeks out, as is mandated in whatever area you're in, we continue to update what your sales predictions and therefore your optimized labor recommendations are for whatever day you're coming up on. A lot of the predictive scheduling areas allow for you to ask for volunteers. So if your sales are going to be, with the more recent predictions, a lot higher than you thought they were going to be 3 weeks ago when you built your schedule, you can actually, through our system, even TimeForge even handles this in the system, so you don't have to call everybody, push out to the employees, hey, looks like we're going to need an extra person at 4 p.m. on Thursday, according to the sales forecast, right? Then you can have people volunteer to pick up that shift so that you're not paying penalties for adjusting the schedule.
That's amazing. I didn't even realize that stuff was there. Well, and I'd love to pick on California because I do hate the some of the laws there, but you've got the meal break penalties, you've got the split shift penalties, you've got daily overtime, daily double time, you got the meal breaks, you got the unpaid breaks or the paid breaks, all of those kind of things. How do you guys deal with any of that? Because I think as far as some of those things are concerned, I think California was at least one of the early adopters, if not the earliest, as it relates to the meal break and some of those kind of things that some other states have adopted, I believe.
Yeah, we deal with it. It's weird. We're weird compared to how everybody else seems to tackle this. The best way I can explain it is that all the other workforce management platforms were built by HR people, and we were built by ops people and data scientists. So we approach it from a, hey, let's just make sure those things that cost you lots of money for no reason that go straight to the government instead of your margin, let's make sure they don't happen. In a compliant way.
I love that.
So meal penalties is a great example of kind of that mindset of how we've built out this product. With meal penalties, typical platforms that, you know, we compete against regularly, the way that they solve for meal penalties is they have an automatic calculator built in on the back end that goes and says, hey, who worked more than 6 hours or 5 hours, depending on how people are perceiving the meal penalties for their area, who worked too long without a meal break, cool, pay them an extra hour for their meal penalty. And like, it's really, really expensive, but the customer is compliant. So a lot of times they're happy because they don't know that there's another option. When we go in, we go, hey, why would anyone ever not take their meal on time? We've got it scheduled in the system. We know that they're already going to be working long enough to qualify. If they don't take their meal on time, we're going to alert their manager on their cell phone so that they can go get them to take their meal without generating a penalty.
I love that. I love that. And again, one of the things that I had put in my notes that I love that you guys at least, you try to do is that, and you mentioned it just a few minutes ago, is it was really written to try and help operators manage their labor better rather than built by HR professionals or by somebody at the, you know, finance level where it's like, let's just make sure that we're calculating every punch. You're really trying to, you know, the TimeForge MO, it seems, is let's try and give the operators the tools they need to do to run their business the best, to be able to help them make more money, have better staff, have, you know, better customer experience, rather than just on the compliance side and on the let's make sure we don't get sued perspective.
Yeah.
I mean, while you guys still deal with that, but you guys really are geared towards trying to help make things better for people.
Yeah. So just like you're allowed to make California jokes, I'm allowed to make HR jokes because I turned into an HR person after being an ops person. So
I love that.
Yeah. I'm on both ends.
Very cool. Very cool. So what have we missed? What have we missed as it relates to both TimeForge and really if you were to look at the whole suite of workforce management? We talked about scheduling. We've talked about time clocks. We've talked about communicating with the operators. We've talked about compliance. What other things are we missing? Missing as far as the core, what you should be looking for if you're going to go change out your workforce management platform?
Yeah, well, I think the biggest disruption to the industry, right? Like e-com, like how's e-com affecting labor? Like that's been a nightmare for some and really successful for others, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So talk to me a little bit about how you guys are tackling that. How are you guys, you know, I think especially for the restaurant industry, e-com and third-party delivery. And I was even talking to a CIO early in the pandemic, and he would say to me, it was a nationally recognized brand that has a couple hundred units. And he would say to me our workforce needed to change so drastically because we originally were really busy on Friday and Saturday nights because people could sit down in dining rooms. And then it went to, you never knew which night of the week was going to be busy. It could be Tuesday night. It could be a Wednesday night because everything was coming through e-com or through takeout or through the phones. And so he was pulling his hair out about a year ago, trying to figure out how to deal with all of that. So how do you guys tackle that? And how do you guys even differentiate what's going on with, you know, with all of these other systems that are entering sales into the restaurant and how to manage all of those things?
Yeah, I mean, it starts out kind of like every other process we launch. It all starts with kind of a triage, right? Like we want to know what's going on at the business because everyone seems to be tackling this new commerce a little bit differently. So we want to know, you know, do you have a completely empty dining room? Are you shut down right now? Right? Are your servers standing around just waiting for people to come in? Or are you really, really busy and having more business than you've ever had before? Because we don't know what we're going to find when we're working with a new customer.
Yep.
And so we want to know, you know, are you losing margin to a third party delivery? And maybe that's the best thing for your business, or do we need to talk about that and figure out how to start leveraging your servers who are standing around in the dining room waiting for business to start helping you deliver instead, right?
Yeah, I shouldn't say I never thought of that, but that's interesting to even take the existing workforce that you might have had scheduled for a different, not only day part, but a different service modality and repurpose them using some of those same predictive analytics and some of the data that you might have. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just especially with the independents that I work with, most of the business owners that I talk to, like their worst fear, especially the independents where it often feels kind of like a family, is that they're going to have to let someone go or they're not going to have enough hours to give some of these teammates that have been with them for, you know, sometimes decades. And so they want to figure out how to keep them around. And I think a lot of times when you're kind of in the thick of it, it's really hard to kind of pop your head up and go, hey, Johnny has a car. Johnny's told me he's willing to do whatever it takes. Maybe he can help with delivery, or maybe he doesn't mind helping with prep some mornings so he can pay his bills and so can I, you know?
I love that. I love that that reconsideration. And again, so much fun. One other thing you said, Audrey, that I want to make sure that we go back to before we kind of work towards wrapping up. You talked a little bit, and I failed to mention it when you brought it up when you guys were dealing with scheduling, is how do you guys deal with that tenure and or skills and or who's best at working the most popular station within the dining room and or repurposing them? You know, when you talked about Johnny doing this, you know, prep and delivery, one of the things that I know a lot of these tools will do is you can rank people or you can look at those types of things. How have you guys addressed any of that if you have?
Yeah. No, that very applicable. So we have what we call skill level tracking. The default is like a 1 through 5. So you can say this person's just learning how to be a cashier. Historically, they've helped in the kitchen. So they're a level 1 cashier, but they're the best line cook we've got. So they're a level 5 line cook. And so we call that in the system, we call that cross training. And you'd be surprised how many platforms don't support cross training. You have one department in one position, and that's not how TimeForge works. We know we grew up in retail. That's one of the pieces is the skill levels. Another is kind of these special skill sets that we can track. Like this person is a key holder. So you can say on your schedule, I need a key holder skill set available for this particular shift. It doesn't matter whether it's a cashier or a manager, but they have to be a key holder. And then
I never even considered that because I just by default, I need to have a person in charge. Like if I were running a retail establishment, I need to have a person in charge. And I always need to have one person in charge, but without that attribute on that person or in that schedule, you might miss it. Sorry, I'll let you keep going. But that's kind of a cool feature. I like that.
Yeah. It's really helpful. Especially if you've got a cashier who's been there for a while and you don't mind them opening the store. Or an assistant manager. And then the other side of that kind of trickles a little bit into the compliance vein. But really it tends to be, pardon me, like a lot of the other compliance things that TimeForge touches, we only touch those because they ruin operations day often. And that's certification tracking and enforcement. My favorite story is one of our very longest time customers. I don't know who she upset, but I think she offended one of the auditors at her at the auditing facility. She's in Canada, that was checking for alcohol certification license or alcohol service licenses at her stores, because they started auditing her like 2 and 3 times a week at her stores.
Oh my gosh.
And
wow. So, and she didn't have people that were compliant every single shift, I'm assuming.
Oh no, she did, because she was using TimeForge.
Look at that.
So we do some certification tracking. So you can say you tie it actually to their job or their position. In order to be a server, you have to have an alcohol service certification on file. And we need to know your license number or your certificate number. And it's going to expire a year from now. And then for any server, when you're building the schedule, any server who either didn't submit that or doesn't have a current one on file that like expired, it'll automatically pop up to the manager, does not have certification on file. You can't schedule this person.
Got ya. Well, that's and as you guys get bigger, I mean, one of the things that I often will talk about on the podcast is you know, when you're a single unit operator and you're in the restaurant and you're doing all your schedules, while that might not be the first thing on your mind, how do you allow technology to assist you, you know, to even be able to do stuff like you just talked about? But then when you get to a second store and a third store and a fourth store, it gets even that much harder to try and understand and make sure that your team members that you have now given the ability to do these things, that they might not have gotten bit by the alcohol board coming in and checking your licenses or whatever else. So they forget to do those things. And if you're not using technology, it's fraught with error. And, you know, there's some potential compliance and risk things there.
Yeah. Well, the coolest part of that story was that she started just printing out a report from TimeForge that had the schedule and everyone's license numbers on it and just posting it on the bulletin board every morning, so that when she did get audited and the auditor walked in, she could just point to the bulletin board and she didn't even have to talk to him.
Wow. Yeah. She must have really pissed somebody off during that time, I'm assuming.
Yeah. I don't know. Or got like a new auditor who was just overzealous. I have no idea.
Or maybe it was on their way home and they just want to come have a drink after they audited them. Who knows? You know,
probably. Yeah.
That's really funny. I guess I'm going to ask, and you know, you might not have a real clear picture, but where is this whole thing going? Where is workforce management going? If you were to look out into, you know, 12, 18, 24, 36 months out into the future, where do you see things changing? Where do you see the intersection of the technologies that people already have and what TimeForge is doing? Where do you see those things at, and where do you see those things going into the future?
Well, there's two main things that are driving that. So the advancement in technology to allow for integrations is so amazing. Just as a vendor, I went to SHRM, which is an HR conference, a couple years ago, and I hadn't been in quite a while. And it was really cool just walking the floor and looking at all the booths, because every person and every entity that was there that was showcasing, I could talk to and talk about an integration with. And 5-10 years ago, that wasn't the case. No one was interested in partnerships. Everyone was fighting to either be in the "I'm a best of breed solution provider" column, or in the all-in-one column. And now vendors don't have to choose, which means that businesses can have the best of both worlds. And so I think we're going to continue to see a lot of players that historically maybe competed against each other, figuring out that they're more powerful to their customers if they work together with their data. And I think that that's going to be amazing for restaurants.
I wholeheartedly agree. I think the advent of opening up the kimono and allowing integration and data, not that the web and some of these other players haven't had it for many, many years, but I would agree with you that in the restaurant vertical, and even in retail for that matter, it's been kind of this walled garden concept where you can't get in and get to my stuff because that might mean that you're going to steal my customer or do something with them that I don't want you to do.
Yeah, exactly. And now everyone's kind of going, ooh, partner, like everyone's throwing around this partner term, like they were big data 10 years ago,
That's and, really funny. I think
ultimately the customers are going to win, which I can get behind 100%.
I unequivocally, and I think it's great that ultimately the end user, being the customer, is the one that has to win, because they're the ones that have to pay the bills for any and all of us that are trying to support them and sell them technology. So Audrey, thank you very much for coming and hanging out with the podcast today. If our audience members were intrigued about what you guys are doing at TimeForge, how do they get in touch with you? How do they see a little bit more about your guys' product and get a little bit more education about what you guys do?
Yeah. So our website is timeforge.com. That's TimeForge.com. You can also find us on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. We're on all of those. We have some really great resources, even if you're not in the market for a workforce management platform. If you want to hear more from me or see some of the resources that our team has put together on things like how to put together a labor budget, all of that's on our website in the Learn section.
I love it. Well, I can't thank you enough for just the education, because again, I think whether you choose to do TimeForge as a workforce management or you choose one of their competitors, in today's day and age, you have to have so many of the tools that TimeForge solves so easily for you. I shouldn't say easy, because it is hard work that you guys have done, and you guys have been doing this for quite some time, but you're at a competitive disadvantage if you don't have some of these solutions. So I would strongly suggest our listeners look into the stuff that Audrey talked about, because it's going to make your business better and going to help you compete with all of those other brands that might already have these things in place. Audrey, thank you again for your time. To our audience, guys, we know that you guys have choices out there. There's hundreds or thousands of podcasts every day that get posted. And so we appreciate you guys spending 45 minutes or so with us each and every week. If you haven't already done so, we would love you to go out to your favorite podcast player and give us a rating, just because it helps others find the podcast. And lastly, while you're online, subscribe to our newsletter. It's once a month. You get an email with all of the content that we put out for that month, 3 to 4 podcasts, a couple blog posts to help you run your restaurant better. Audrey, thank you again for your time, and to our audience, make it a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Visit restauranttechnologyguys.com for tips, industry insights, and more to help you run your restaurant better.